Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartzdraber, your host. On today's show, the war on drugs and encryption. Has the war on drugs become a war on phones? The Apple FBI saga made encryption a household issue for arguably the first time ever. But while that case focused a lot on counterterrorism, as the phone was the work phone of one of the San Bernardino terrorist attackers, the vast majority of law enforcement's confrontations with the tech sector seem to deal with drug investigations, not counterterrorism. Is the going dark problem really an issue of national security? Or is law enforcement just trying to solve more drug crimes by getting into the locked phones of drug dealers? Joining me to discuss this is Eli Dorado, director of the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center, a research center based at George Mason University. Eli, thank you for joining the show again.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
So, Eli, you argue that this is not necessarily an issue of public safety, that this encryption debate is really about social policy and our policy against drugs. How much is the war on drugs related to the war on encryption?
I think they're very much intertwined. And, you know, I remember when FBI Director James Comey was testifying in Congress, he explicitly framed it, you know, I don't have all the answers. This is a very difficult question of privacy versus public safety. And I just think that's wrong. There is a trade-off here, but it's not just privacy on the one hand, right? It's also information security. We carry lots of information on our phones. It's not just about, you know, privacy, the stuff that we're embarrassed to have, our financial records, our health records, strategic information from our businesses, and so on. And then on the other hand, it's not just public safety. And I would argue, actually, public safety is just a tiny fraction of what's at stake on the other side. On the other side, it's mostly, as you've already said, it's the war on drugs and it's social policy.
So we always hear this framing of privacy versus security, but you bring up an important point where cybersecurity is often directly linked to physical safety. You can imagine situations where if our information is insecure, our identity could be stolen, we could be blackmailed, people could track our movements. There's a lot of reasons why having good security and encryption is important for physical safety. And I often make the point that while terrorism is awful and we should definitely do whatever is in our power within the bounds of reasonable constitutional limits to fight terrorism, it's not affecting the number of people that people think it does. Whereas cyber attacks, there's only two types of people, the saying goes, those who've been hacked and those who don't know they've been hacked. So undermining cybersecurity for the sake of a false promise of physical security is always a BS framing, and those in the privacy community like to talk about security versus security. It's cybersecurity, it's physical security, it's all related, and you're not going to give up one to take the other. So just to kind of get a sense of the scope of the problem of going dark as it relates to encryption, how much of law enforcement's struggles with encryption is related to drugs versus terrorism? Like, do you have numbers on this?
Sure. So there are, I mean, there's different ways you can slice the data. So one is you can look at just in general how much law enforcement devotes to efforts on drugs versus other types of attacks. And so in 2014, the latest year that we have complete data, there were 1.5 million arrests for drug-related offenses. And that's more than three times as many for all of what the FBI classifies as violent crimes put together. So many more, arrests for drugs than for violent crimes. And then, you know, within those, that subset of drugs arrests, 83.1% in 2014 were for mere possession of drugs, not just not dealing, not, you know, being part of a gang, or whatever.
Which is arguably a victimless crime.
I mean, I don't mean to, not everybody is going to be persuaded by the hardcore libertarian view that this is completely harmless.
Right.
But let's at least keep it in context and say this is, you know, in many cases this might be teenagers hitting a bong in the basement. They don't pose a very serious threat to public safety.
Yeah, and that's the argument we hear, is that encryption and people being able to communicate undetected is a direct threat to public safety. And there are many who would argue that I'm not threatened by other people making choices about their lives. I'm not threatened by someone who decides to take drugs and just possess them. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, there is an entire violent black market around drugs, but that is caused by their illegality. Mostly, it's not caused by the drugs themselves. It's caused by the fact that there's so much money to be made that many of the neighborhoods that the government has destroyed through the drug war have nothing left but a drug economy. Mm-hmm. There's not exactly many opportunities for some of these people. And it's not just a question of just say no. We need to really think about how ineffective the drug war has been. And then we should think about the outgrowth of that drug war and think, you know, maybe this big push to get into every single phone, maybe we should be dealing with the root of the problem, mm-hmm. which is the drug war, and not be thinking, not even be trying to get into these phones.
Yeah, and it goes even farther than that, because you could have money laundering charges, right? So you have all this attempt to launder money is due to the fact that the drugs are illegal in the first place, and so you make a bunch of money. You need to like sort of legitimize that money somehow. So an overwhelming amount of law enforcement's resources go towards the drug war. So I think it stands to reason that the drug war is a huge part of the battle that law enforcement is fighting to get access to these phones, right? It is interesting that we call them law enforcement, right, and not public safety officers, because this has nothing to do with public safety. This is, as we said, this is about enforcing a social policy, which you may think is good or bad, but let's get the terms straight when we have this debate about the trade-off.
And it's telling that the big blow-up over FBI centered around counterterrorism, and that was a choice that the FBI made to make that the hill that it died on. They wanted it to be a terrorism case because it is much more sympathetic, and most people's knee-jerk reaction is, well, we need to do everything we can to stop terrorism. It's interesting, and it might be indicative of a shift in public opinion on the war on drugs, that they don't go around saying things like, not getting into a meth dealer's phone mm-hmm. is a tragedy and a threat to public safety. They don't focus heavily on the vast majority of their motivation. Yeah. So if their motivation is mostly the drug war, that's not the public persona of the FBI. Yeah. It is much more about, well, what about terrorism?
It's very interesting how politically savvy they are, in the sense that they went after this case in San Bernardino that was a terrorism case. Apple filed a motion to seal the proceedings because they didn't want this playing out in the public eye, and the FBI opposed that motion. So the FBI wanted this case to be public because it was such a good poster child for them. But it seems it's clear that it's not at all representative. And since then, the ACLU has compiled a list of all the phones and all the cases where iPhones or phones in general have been access to encrypted devices has been sought under the All Writs Act, and they've found 63 cases so far, and along with some of my colleagues at Mercatus, Joe Kane and Andre Castillo, we looked at, you know, if we look at the individual cases and what those crimes are for, we found that of the 63, only 41 were we able to determine what the crime was, and in about two thirds of those cases, it was all nonviolent stuff. So again, not clear that public safety is the driving force here.
And it's we were speculating before the show that a lot of people's resistance to law enforcement, including the companies, might be because most of it is drug war fueled, and there is a legitimate. There are people who don't think it's a worthwhile thing. I'll count me among them. Mm-hmm. I think it's been a massive failure. If the goal has been to eliminate drugs or reduce drug consumption, that has failed. We hear about on the news heroin epidemic here, heroin epidemic there. It doesn't seem like it's worked. So, of course, when we make cybersecurity policy decisions and things about encryption based on this effort that has largely failed, people are going to be very skeptical of law enforcement and the FBI. And if most of what the FBI and law enforcement focused on was violent crime like rape and murder and theft and things like that, and and protecting private property, they might be more sympathetic to arguments about cooperation. So it's interesting that even if you still come down on the don't go into the phone, and even if the war on drugs were out of the picture and you still were skeptical of law enforcement, they might be in a better position in their debate over encryption and cybersecurity if they would drop the drug war or reallocate resources. And you don't all have to do, it doesn't all have to be done legislatively. There's a lot President Obama could do at the executive level of shuffling resources and reprioritizing things. People might be more willing to hear the FBI out about its struggles with phones if they weren't always trying to get into a meth dealer's phone.
Right, right. Well, and the other thing about it is that given that they spend so much manpower prosecuting the war on drugs, that they have so many agents devoted to wiretapping drug dealers and to just enforcing all aspects, and of course the financial crimes, right, that are actually only crimes because they're tied to drugs.
Right.
If you reallocate those resources to the actual threats to public safety, to violent crimes, to murders, to terrorism, etc., you have a whole lot more manpower to do the legwork, to do the real, you know, police work. That is so often necessary in those cases, right? So, I think it's a little unrealistic to expect that our law enforcement agencies are going to be able to protect us without actually doing any real police work. Let's not hand everything necessarily over to law enforcement via, you know, a court order, and let's have them dig up evidence themselves using old-fashioned police tactics.
And of course, that sounds so logical, right? I mean, if the war on drugs has been a massive failure, I think the data support that. You know, someone could come on the show and debate me about that. Mm-hmm. It's not really a tech issue. We're showing right. How it's a tech issue today. But really, I mean, it just seems obvious. Okay, reallocate those wasted resources on nonviolent drug crime, decriminalize drugs at least, maybe even legalize them. Topic for another show, maybe a different podcast.
Yeah.
But it just seems so obvious, but yet there are these huge roadblocks.
Yeah.
And there's a reason why we remain, you know, the country that locks up 25% of the world's prison population and things like that. It's because there's entire economies in this country are based on prisons. There is a massive profit incentive. You have private prisons. You have maybe law enforcement is scared to reveal just how many fewer resources they could effectively do their jobs
yeah.
with. Because if you take the war on drugs off the table, and that is in some cases, you say 91% of wiretaps, things like
yeah,
that.
At the federal level, and
right.
something like 88% at the state level.
Yeah, yeah. Imagine you might reveal that you could cut police departments in half, have
yeah.
them still be effective. So it's a scary prospect, and there's a lot of institutional inertia,
yeah.
and there's a lot of people who benefit from the drug war. There's a lot of money to be made in the drug war. And so as we sit here and talk logically about how ending the drug war would be great and it would maybe solve a lot of the problems with law enforcement trying to undermine encryption, there are very real reasons why this seemingly logical thing hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And it is political. And of course, you know, we could have more resources allocated to treatment of addiction
right.
and so on. So it doesn't mean... opposing the drug war doesn't necessarily mean that you have to think it's okay for everybody to go around smoking meth.
Right.
You might still think, well, the question really is how do we best deal with this phenomenon of people using drugs and becoming addicted and so on. And then, you know, by reducing the resources needed to enforce criminalization, you free up resources for other things, including combating terrorism and other violent crimes, and also treating the people that have been harmed, and that may be a more compassionate and effective way to deal with the problem of addiction.
Yeah, and people might be more willing to allocate better resources to national security purposes or more advanced cybersecurity tools, and there might be a bigger appetite for that
mm-hmm.
if there was a clear line drawn between
yeah.
the NSA and local law enforcement. And we've seen in other areas of the privacy debate where that line is blurring and the government's talking about sharing raw data captured by the NSA with local law enforcement. That's scary to a lot of people. I mean, the thought that you could be prosecuted for a local crime with information that was obtained by the NSA, God knows how.
Mm-hmm.
And how's your lawyer even going to begin to make the argument that this was somehow illegally obtained
right.
if there's a shroud of secrecy around everything they do?
Right, right.
So me personally, I'd be more willing to hear the FBI say, you know, we need this cybersecurity tool or we need to beef up this if they would drop the drug crap. because there are just a lot of people who are philosophically, morally opposed to that, think that rehabilitation is a much better strategy. Now, where do you see this debate going? I mean, is there, you know, has there been a positive reception to the work you've done on this? Do people get that the war on drugs and the debate over encryption are very related?
You know, I think I've made this argument a little bit online, and I think it's been fairly positive reception, but I don't think anybody's like taking it and running with it. And what I would really like to see is for the tech companies themselves to realize this, to realize that there are completely unnecessary confrontations going on between them and law enforcement because of this social policy that might be a good reason for them to oppose the social policy, right? That is creating all these confrontations. And so I would really like to see, you know, tech companies, all of Silicon Valley, as well as the telecom companies, right? To come out and say, you know, we really question whether this criminalization of this activity that, you know, maybe it's not the best activity in the world, but do we need to criminalize it? Do we need to throw so many law enforcement resources after it? And I think, you know, these companies have a lot of political clout.
Yeah.
And I think if they really, you know, I think this is in their interest, right? Very, you know, both in their narrow interest and in the broader national interest to use some of that clout to end the conflict or to end 90% of the conflict that we're having between tech and law enforcement.
Yeah, we can't underestimate the influence that these companies have. I mean, they have, someone made the point in an event we had yesterday that companies like, you know, Uber, Google, Facebook, they have a bunch of lobbyists called happy users. And those people are willing to go to bat for their companies when they take political stands. And whether you agree with Apple or not, mm-hmm. about whether they should have complied under the All Writs Act in this particular case, it was amazing to see the outpouring of support from customers, mm-hmm. especially given that the FBI intentionally picked a counterterrorism case, yep. thinking that that would get the vast majority yep. of Americans on their side. And while it was split 50-50, I would call that a win for Apple, because I mean, you're refusing to help with a terrorism investigation, and that's not a popular thing yeah. in theory.
Well, and the polls moved during right. the discussion about it, right? Yeah. So initially, I think when most people heard about it, they sided with the FBI.
You know, right.
Like the early poll numbers said, you know, yes, Apple should of course unlock this phone.
That's a complex issue.
And as they
issue,
learned yeah. more about it, right? This is actually a much more difficult case to make. And so I do think that, you know, from the starting point to where we ended up, I think it was a big win for Apple. But, you know, having so much influence, having so many, you know, Apple's, what, the number one brand in the world, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
You know, and other tech companies as well. If they really united and said, you know, this is going to really cause problems for us if we don't do the right thing here. I think that the users would listen, and I think that politicians would listen, because there are very few politicians who openly defend the war on drugs.
Right.
You know, in terms of when faced with the consequences of it, nobody in you know, favors all the botched raids. You know, the stun grenade that went into a 19-month-old toddler's crib.
Right. There's been some serious blunders.
Ripped off his face.
Yeah.
Nobody favors that. So everybody, I think, knows we have a problem, and there's just, I think, not enough appetite on the Hill to tackle it, and in the White House. And so I think that these tech companies could go a long way toward making something happen.
Well, that's it for today's show. For more, check out Eli's excellent work on this topic, which we link to in the show notes. And you can see more of his organization's work at mercatus.org. We've been trying out new equipment recently, so let us know what you think on our Twitter feed at TechFreedom or on Facebook.com/TechFreedom. You could always pitch guests to the show or ideas for the show at media@techfreedom.org. And find this podcast in iTunes or on your favorite podcast app. And thank you for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.